Here's a three. Carson tries another one. Are you serious? Carson Cox with 6 3-pointers, 20 points in the first half. What a performance by the 6 foot junior shooting guard. He is absolutely on fire.
Carson Cox put on a show in the first half of the 3A state championship game against Girard, a battle of the Trojans on Saturday in Hutchinson. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough as Beloit falls in the state championship 49-45. So Beloit finishes second in the state for the sixth time in school history, still looking for that elusive first ever state championship. And it just doesn't, you know, here's the thing we try to tell people. Life isn't fair, right? We've heard that a few times.
Yes.
Life isn't fair. In fact, my 12-year-old just used it on me the other day when I said something. He's like, well, Dad, life's not fair. I'm like, yep, way to show it in my face. Well played. Well played. Life isn't fair. And you know, it's interesting. Some people say, well, you know, things even out. Do they?
Be nice if they would.
Do they really even out? Because if you're the Beloit Trojans basketball team and you follow them over the years, they've been the 6 state championship games. I mean, the law of averages are they're going to win one of those, right?
Yes.
And so many of them have been close, too. It's not like they've been blown out every single one or overmatched. And they just haven't been able to get there. And the latest, you know, installment was tough. I mean, I was bummed out. I'm sure many people are bummed out. And, I mean, it was there for them. They're up 7 early in the fourth. And, you know, of all the times to have an offensive drought, that is not the time for it.
No.
Because their defense was really good. They did, I think, everything they wanted to do in that game from a defensive standpoint. Make Girard hit 3-point shots, take away their superstar. They got him in foul trouble. I mean, it was all right there.
Yeah.
And then just couldn't buy a bucket. And you have to give Girard a lot of credit. They went man-to-man. Girard took away Carson Cox. He didn't have many looks in the second half. So Girard played well. I thought they'd wear down because Beloit had more depth. But Girard, congrats to them. It's their first ever state title themselves. They had disappointment 08 and 09 and lost 2 tough title games. But you just sit here and you're like, man, the law of averages – Beloit should be 2-4. Well, law of average should be 3-3, but yeah. You know, at least have 1 or 2 out of those 6, and so close, and just didn't get the job done because they just couldn't make a shot. They missed their last 13 shots in the game, and here's the other thing that blows you away. You'd sit here and go, well, Beloit must have turned the ball over or something. No, they had 5 turnovers the whole game. Beloit had 5 turnovers the whole game. At state, if you only turn it over 5 times in the state final,
yeah.
You usually win.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's what's crazy. I mean, Beloit only averaged 9 turnovers a game. They handled the ball so well. They did again the other day, and they just couldn't get a bucket when they really, really needed one. I mean, just one bucket somewhere. I mean, they only had 3 field goals in the second half.
Yeah.
They had 2 twos, a 3, and 7 free throws. I mean, if they just get one bucket. I mean, they scored 14 points in the second half, 4 in the fourth quarter. 2 points in the only 1 field goal. Actually, they didn't score a field goal in the last 7:47. Listen, they could have made 1 field goal in the last 7:47 and still could have won state. That's how good they are. If you want to really flip this thing, Beloit was that good that they went the final 7:47 and still had a chance to win in the final minute. Oh, man, it's tough, it's isn't it? Sports can be frustrating.
I was obviously at Dodge, but I had the video pulled up, so I was watching a little bit while I was watching the St. John Central Plains Championship on the boys' side there in Dodge at 1 end. I was just like, man. And my buddy texted me. He's like, boy, it's just snake-bitten, man. Like, in the
seems
finals,
like it.
It's like, I was like, man, I agree. Because, you know, when that 3 that we played here, when Carson made that, I was like, oh, man, they're rolling right now, man. And, but then they hit that 3 right.
I'm telling
you,
that to me was one of the biggest shots of the game.
And I thought that right when I saw it, and I'm like, oh no,
yeah,
like you don't want to leave them and let them get a shot like that right there before the half.
Yeah,
and it was a huge shot. I mean, how much does that help Gerard's confidence going into the locker room? I mean,
absolutely.
You're down 9. This kid's made 6 threes on you. You can't figure out how to stop him.
Right.
And then now you come down here and knock this down. Now you're within 2 possessions when the second half starts.
Insane.
So, but yeah, it was a roller coaster of emotion, the little bit that I was able to watch.
Yeah.
I'm sure for you it was insane,
yes.
But the little bit that I was able to watch, it was like, oh no. because it's like they had the lead like the whole time here, and then, oh man.
When you talk about being snake bitten, okay, Caleb Muya, who is the star for Girard, averages 24 points, 10 rebounds, probably be the Class 3A state player of the year, and should be.
Mm-hmm.
He's super athletic, doesn't have a great jump shot at all, made five threes all year long. Five threes all year long. First quarter's winding down. He's about 30 feet away, and he just chucks a three and nails it.
Yeah.
And I saw Coach Eilert and Coach Biden just kind of chuckle at each other like, that's not in the scouting report. I mean, you shouldn't have to. I mean, and, you know, he misses that shot. That's 3 points that's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then they hit the buzzer beater at the end of the first half from a kid from Girard. Girard only made three threes the whole state tournament until Saturday. They made four in the first quarter against Beloit. Now, they had some open looks because Beloit was really paying attention to Muya. Mm-hmm. And give them credit, they knocked them down.
Exactly. Yeah.
But if you believe in being snake bitten, the second three or the 3-pointer right before halftime made it six. That was a huge play. And another huge play was 45-42. Beloit had the lead, and Evan Troike made his only 3-pointer of the night to tie the game. Those kids for Girard, they made seven threes, and they averaged per game this year, they made three a game.
Wow.
So, and it's funny because I was talking to Coach Eilert before the game, you know, for the pregame interview, and we were talking this and that. And I just told him, I said, I have a good feeling about this. I said, I like this matchup for you. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
I said, unless they go nuts from three. And that's the thing that is so frustrating because, and trust me, I've seen this so many times. And I was sharing with my family on the way back from Hutchison because I was a little, you know, I was bummed. Of course you are. I mean, you follow a team all year long and you're so close. I mean, everybody's kind of bummed. And it's unfortunate because, you know, you have an unbelievable season at 24-2. And so I'll give you a couple of examples of the difference, the small line between a championship and not. I was covering Frankfort boys basketball. I forgot what year it was. I was up in Seneca, and Brian Ebert, or Ebert, I always called him Ebert, Coach Ebert, whatever, great guy. He coaches the Frankfort girls now, and his daughter's going to play Division I basketball, so there's a talented family.
Mm.
And anyway, he was the head coach of the boys at the time. And I was sitting next to him and Dean Dollinghouse, an assistant coach for Frankfort, behind one of the goals at Fort Hays State University, and we were watching the state semifinal. His team had already punched their ticket to the state championship game. So we're watching, and we're all conversing about, you know, Hanston. What they like to do, this and that, whatever else. I'm pretty sure it was Hanston. And we knew the Salmon brothers, Levi and Luke, were really good. Well, you had to keep the ball out of their hands. Well, can they shoot the three that well? Well, yeah, a little bit. And we're watching the game, and there's this kid that he shoots four threes and doesn't really come close to making them. And we knew the stats. He shot like 20% from three the whole entire season, all right? So fast forward the very next night. State championship game. Frankfort's up three. Hanston has the ball. They bring it down the floor. Now, you can certainly, hindsight's 20/20. I think Coach Ebert would say today, I probably should have fouled. Instead, he didn't. But here's the thing. They weren't going to let the Salmon brothers beat him. And they didn't. The ball went inside. They were all over him. They kick it out to the kid that couldn't buy a three-pointer the night before and did not shoot the three very well all year long. As the final seconds winding down for a state championship, Frankfort's up three. The kid that you want, taking the shot if you're Frankfort, lines it up from the wing, and what do you think happened?
Buries it.
Buried it.
Yep.
And guess what happened?
Hanston won the championship.
They won it in overtime.
Yep.
Listen, you can have the best scouting report. You can be the greatest coach in the world. But sometimes it might just not be meant to be that particular night or year or whatever the case may be, and you do feel snake bitten. And I can assure you, coaches, after every close game, I coach Pee Wee baseball. I still think about a game we lost at state, 1-0, and what if we could have done something differently?
Mm-hmm.
But then this past year, we lost to the same team, but we lost 8-2. I didn't feel so bad about that because we just lost. I mean, they were just better than us. I mean, we just flat out got beat. But the 1-0 game, I still think we could have easily won that game had a couple things gone our way. Could we have done something differently? And that loss as a coach of Pee Wee Baseball still sits in my head, and I sound stupid to some people out there listening right now. But as a coach, you remember the losses more than you remember the wins. You just do. And my son made this really interesting question, and I will ask you the same question because it's a hard question to answer. There is the first place game and there's the third place game. The Osborne boys end their season with a win. They send their seniors out with a win. Mm-hmm. They finish 25-1. They finish in third at state. They didn't make it state finals, but they finished third. Thunder Ridge girls, best ever finish in state history. They finish with a win for their seniors, and they finish third. All right? I get to the sports arena on Saturday. Perry LeCompton boys, who Beloit beat the night before in the semis, is celebrating a third place trophy, and the coach is all smiles.
Yes.
Then a few hours later, state championship game, Girard comes back and wins in the fourth quarter, and there weren't a lot of smiles going around for the team that finished second ahead of the team that finished third.
Mm-hmm.
My son's question was, it's a fair question. He said to me, Dad, I think, really wasn't a question, it's more of a statement. He said, Dad, I think it might be better to win the third place game than to lose in the state championship. And I said, well, I disagree with that to an extent. I said, if you're in the state championship, that means you have a chance to win it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you, I tweaked it. I said, listen, I would rather, this sounds weird, I would rather play and win the third place game if I knew my heart was going to be broken in the state championship game.
Yeah.
But if I, listen, I'd rather go to the state championship game. If I lose by 20, I lose by 20. But I'd rather take second than third. I really would. But at the same time, I would, if I'm going to lose a state championship, I'd just rather get blown out than lose in such a close, hard-fought game. Now, some people disagree with that. Say, listen, that means that you just weren't that good, whereas you had a chance to win. No, no, no. The question is, if you knew ahead of time what the result would be, would you rather, could you cope with it more if the other team was just simply better than you the whole game?
Mm-hmm.
Or if it came down to one play here, or a guy making his only three-pointer of the night? Which would be harder for you to swallow? And for me personally, I'm just talking Pee Wee baseball, the 8-2 loss in the first round of state this year, or second round, because we got a bye, first round, was easier to take for me than it was the year before when we lost 1-0. So I guess if I'm answering my own question, I guess I would say that.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that weird when we start thinking about these things? Because when it's such a close game, you second guess everything. As a player, you second guess everything. What if I did this or that? Trust me. Because I remember, I played way back in the day. As a coach, and I've done some coaching, I'm not a great coach at all, not by any stretch of imagination. But I think about the things we could have done differently, even when we win sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay? And then imagine, of course, the fans. They're thinking, what if this would have happened, or if this guy would have got a foul, or if that guy wouldn't have made the three? And as broadcasters, we think, trust me, I didn't get much sleep the other night. Mm-hmm. I can imagine what it's like for coaches, where I'm just like, oh my goodness, I'm replaying the game in my mind. I'm going, oh, what if this happened? What if that kid does not make a three at the end of the first half? I think it's a different game.
Yeah.
And so we get caught up in the disappointment of a loss. And we see this in the NCAA tournament. I'll give you another great case in point. Michigan Wolverines are playing Houston in the second round of the NCAA tournament in Wichita last year. Michigan is down 2. Houston has the ball, 2 free throws to seal the game. From a guy that shoots 78% from the line, I believe it was. He misses both free throws. Could have sealed the game. Michigan brings it down, chucks a 35-footer at the buzzer. Bingo, Michigan wins. Michigan goes on to the national championship game last year. Had that kid not missed 2 free throws, or they don't chuck up a prayer and make it, Michigan loses in the second round of the NCAA tournament. And guess what Jim Boeheim gets by making it all the way to the national championship? He gets a contract extension. But if that shot doesn't go in the second round of the tournament in Wichita, or that other guy makes a couple free throws, there might be talk, why should we give him an extension? He lost in the second round. Isn't it amazing how fine of line it is?
Oh, yeah.
Between winning and losing. I mean, it's flat out amazing. I'll give you another example. St. Mary's, who was up 9 on Beloit with 4:39 to go in the sub-state semis. Trust me, they could have made it to the state finals in the state tournament.
Mm-hmm.
They were good enough to do it. And I think their youth might have cost them maybe, but it depends on the matchups. They could be sitting here today going, my goodness, we had Beloit down 9, We would have been in the state title game. Maybe we could have won it. Instead, they lost on a shot with 5 seconds left in double overtime after that 9-point lead. You don't think they are second-guessing themselves and replaying that game as soon as that one was over?
Yeah.
And so St. Mary's lost in the sub-state semis. They could have easily been in the state finals. I'll give you one more example. Girard, who won the state championship, was down 10 at the end of the third quarter in the sub-state semifinals at Caney Valley against Caney Valley. They were down 10 going to the fourth quarter. Then figured it out, outscored Caney Valley 25-4 in the fourth and won by 11. You don't think Caney Valley is watching this on video stream or whatever going, we had the state champs down 10 at our house, and if we won that game, we might have been state champions. It's just amazing the fine line it is between success, and I hate to say failure because I don't think it's a failure to finish second in state, but success and winning and losing. The line between winning and losing, it is so fine. I mean, think about Bill Self. He wouldn't even have a national championship if Memphis would have fouled, which they were instructed to do.
Or made one of the free
or
throws.
Or made one of any of those free throws. Or Mario Chalmers doesn't put up his prayer.
Yeah.
I mean, Kansas doesn't even have a national championship, and Bill Self probably isn't even the head coach of Kansas right now.
I agree with that.
I mean, it's just a fine, fine line.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating, but yet that's what makes sports so great. There's the ecstasy of success, and there is the disappointment in a loss. And I just, all you got to do is watch a 3A girls final right before us. Cheney was up by 12 in the third quarter. I thought Cheney was going to win the game. I thought that going in. Royal Valley came back. Great effort. Forced overtime. And this girl, who had no conscience, by the way, for Royal Valley, no conscience whatsoever. I mean, she'd chuck it. You'd be sitting there going, oh, the day before in the semifinals, they're up like by 6. And there's like 30 seconds. You're like, oh, yeah, you're going to run out the clock. She chucks a 3 from the corner. And you're like, what are you doing? Swish.
Yeah.
She had no fear. Mm-hmm. So the game's tied, and I thought Royal Valley's going to hold for the final shot of overtime. And if they don't make it, worst case scenario, you go double overtime, right?
Yeah.
So they move the ball. They kill like 40 seconds. You know, okay, you're just waiting for it. All right, here we go. Last second shot. All of a sudden, that same girl catches the ball. I bet it was 25 feet on the right wing. She just lets it go. I'm like, oh, God. Oh, my God, what a shot.
Yeah.
Because if she misses that, Cheney has the last shot and a chance to win a state championship. And she made it. You don't think Cheney's kicking themselves today and going back going, oh, man, what if we would have made one of those 3 shots at the end of regulation? They had 3 cracks at it from about 8 feet and couldn't get it to fall.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's tough. You know what's really tough? Is when the second place team, the team that loses a heartbreak in a championship, has to pose for pictures.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
I feel for them because that's not, they don't want to be taking that picture.
Well, take that picture 2 days later, you'll be all right, because you've had time to process and deal with it and understand we had a great season. But
at that point in time, you're not thinking
like,
that.
I've been there with teams, and it's just like, oh, man, this is not.
You don't want to smile.
Yeah.
You don't even care about the trophy at the time because your goal was to win a state title. And I saw Cheney taking their picture right in front of me, and there was this one girl that just muttered the F word, which I understand her frustration. She was just like, I don't want, you could tell she did not want to be in the picture.
Exactly.
She was totally frustrated that they had blown a 12-point lead and lost the state championship in overtime. It was a heartbreaker. And so that leads me back to what my 12-year-old son said. The third-place teams, they ended the year with a win.
Yeah.
They had smiles on their faces. I saw Osborne. They had smiles on their faces. Thunder Ridge.
Yeah.
Now, granted, Thunder Ridge and Osborne, maybe, you know, hey, it was going to be tough to win a state title because Central Plains was a heavy favorite in both. Maybe that makes it a little bit different. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whereas 3A was pretty open, and Beloit was one of the favorites. But it is an interesting play of the mind when you throw that out there. Would it be better if you knew you were going to lose the state championship, if you knew you were going to lose it?
Yeah, it's.
Would you rather finish with a win for your seniors so you end on a happy-go-lucky note and send them out with a W? Because the other thing that stunk in with me as soon as that game was over is, oh my, that's it for the 5 seniors.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like that. You're dreaming of a championship. You're working so hard for a championship. And then just like that, you don't even realize it. Oh, that's the last time I play.
Yeah, it's so final. And
oh, God. Sports can be frustrating and tough.
Yeah. There's two different things you were talking about there. Obviously was the second or third, and then lose by 2 or lose by 15 or something like that. The second and third, that's a hindsight 2020 type deal. You know, if because there's no question I want to be playing for a state championship. And especially if I'm Beloit, sure. I understand that I've got a very, very good opportunity to win a state title. You're talking about Thunder Ridge girls. They knew going into the semifinals it was an uphill climb, and they probably weren't going to play for a state championship. The Osborne boys, they lost in overtime in the semifinals.
They lost a
very
heartbreaker
easy
too.
Opportunity to be in the same situation Beloit was at the end of the year,
yes.
And finish second.
You don't think Jamie Walters and staff weren't up all night long going, what could we have done differently to win the semifinal?
Probably 4 o'clock in the morning, they're like, oh, yeah, we're playing at 2 o'clock. Going through all their mind. But, again, Osborne was going to be, if they won, would have been a very heavy underdog against Central Plains, but they had the opportunity to maybe finish second. Right. Talking with Coach Walters, obviously that's what they wanted, but they couldn't get it done there in overtime. So, but yeah, they were happy with third. But it is a hindsight 20/20. Now, personally, if you're going through it, yeah, if you know, like you said, if you know the result and how it's going to end, it's probably going to be more fun to finish third, and you're going to be feeling a little bit better about the way your season ended on a win. But yeah, for me, I want to have that opportunity, though, to be in that championship game and say I had the chance. On the other side of it, as far as the deficit you lose by, ask K-State fans which one hurt worse in football, 1998 or 2012.
Yeah.
And that's going to be your answer on that, because 98 hurt way worse for most every K-State football fan when they lost in double overtime in the Big 12 championship compared to getting blown out by Baylor to end their undefeated season and chance at a national title.
Mm-hmm.
That's the easiest way for me to answer that question as a fan of sports,
as
a K-State fan, and understanding how I felt in 1998 compared to how I felt in 2012. I was over it by about 11 minutes left in the game in 2012.
Right.
Because I knew there was no chance and it was over.
Yeah.
98, it was everybody lost and it was set up for you to go.
Yeah.
And your heart was ripped out.
When you lose in a tough situation, you second-guess everything.
Yes.
Like, I got a text from somebody kind of second-guessing some things, although they weren't critical. They were just like, oh, you know, what if we did? I'm like, you know what? It's easy for everybody to second-guess. I said, you know what? I guarantee you people that I know are going, what if we stay in a different hotel? Seriously, these things go through their minds.
Yeah.
What if we stay in a different hotel? What if we ate a different pregame meal? What if we went back and stayed and didn't stay in a hotel? What if, the funny one, what if Wade would have played Inner Sandman on Saturday? You know, that would have helped. Everybody's superstitious as well. And I was told by my son a couple of players didn't probably get the best sleep the night before the game. I said, well, okay, but I bet you Gerard had some kids that didn't get a lot of sleep either. Listen, if I was in the state championship game, I wouldn't sleep much the night before no matter what bed I lied in. Would you?
No.
Amped up, ready to go, that I could not fall asleep. I wouldn't.
No.
So it doesn't matter if I was in my own bed or not.
In that situation, but I can guarantee you that no, I would not.
No.
I'll have to go back and talk to some of the kids I know that have played in those games. Hey, how much sleep did you get during the whole state tournament?
Not only
the night before the game, but once you're going into that championship game.
Yeah.
It's like, no, there's no way.
No, right.
I might doze for like an hour at the most combined.
Yeah. Yeah, so everybody's wired, you know, differently, but I think a lot of us are wired in the same way from the standpoint that if we're really excited about something, the next day, we don't sleep well the night before.
No.
We really don't.
You don't sleep well if you win it either, and you probably don't sleep well if you lose it. Like, no matter what happens.
You're on such a high, you want it, you don't
sleep.
You're
so high celebrating.
Right.
Adrenaline. That nothing's going to happen, or you're so low and down and thinking about everything that went wrong, like you said, that you just, that's a grueling probably 36 hours about that is just like it's the thrill of being part of all of it too. I mean, that's why you're part of it, whether it's the thrill or the agony of defeat, whichever one.
One of the things that, you know, we develop relationships with coaches, you and I and broadcasters do, and some of the fans do with their coaches, especially the kids on the team. And you know, this is why I try not to publicly say anything or even in my own mind second guess coaches at the high school or lower level. And here's why. Because one, they ain't getting paid much to do it.
Yes.
Two, they care more than or just as much as a college or a pro coach making millions of dollars, if not more.
Most, there's going to be more, I think.
Yeah. And then there's the community aspect to it. And I just It takes a very special person to coach a group of young women or young men at the high school level or even lower. It takes special people to volunteer their time in some cases, or yeah, they might get a supplemental contract and get paid something. And then you divide that by the hours they put in, and they make probably 50 cents an hour, yeah, if they're lucky.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you think about all the hours they don't get to sleep. Think about all the time they don't spend with their family. They miss out on their kids on some activities. They miss out spending time with their spouse, you know, whatever it may be, or family event or this or that. And they've always got the big game coming up in their mind. And so they're not, you're having a conversation with them, you know, your own wife could have a conversation with you and you're just tuning it out. Not because you're trying to be rude, but you're thinking about the next game or what we did wrong the night before, whatever it may be. It consumes you. And it's not a bad consumption, but yet it's not good sometimes either.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of fans out there don't understand that. Unless you've coached at some level, in any level, I'm talking any level as a coach, you would understand this a little bit more. And that's why I appreciate all the coaches for themselves to put themselves out there. There's some coaches that are almost thrown to the wolves and have to coach because nobody else wants to coach. And it's not a glorious position. It's really, only time it's glorious is when, you know, you are holding that trophy at the end of the year, I guess. Even then, it's more. Sometimes it's more about relief than it is success.
Ask Bill Self. When it happens, for a lot of them, it's relief.
Instead of,
if you have a team now, yeah, that you're expected to get,
yeah,
here.
Right.
Now, if you have a team that's a Cinderella
underdog
story.
Like Royal Valley, maybe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you have a Cinderella story, it's not a relief. It's just, mm-hmm, complete joy, and it's like,
yeah,
I can't believe we did it. You,
right,
know? But if you're a team that, I go back to like when St. John's Tipton won it in 2014. There was a relief without question because they expected to do it by the end of the thing, and they were up by 16 and held on for a 2-point win in the end. So, you know, it was definitely a relief right away. Obviously, the joy was always there. It's always there, and,
right,
excitement's always there. But you can see that sense of, mm-hmm, oh man, I'm glad we got that done because I don't even want to know what would have happened if we didn't. You know, that kind of,
exactly,
thinking that creeps in.
And so on that note, when we're talking about coaches and relationships that we make, and maybe we're a little bit biased because we develop friendships and relationships with the coaches and they trust us with information and so forth and so on. But at the same time, it's very difficult to watch coaches that give everything that they give and then they are relieved of their duties. And we have seen that over the years as well.
Yes.
In all my time, and I know you have as well, and I'm sure there's going to be more of that to come.
Yes.
And I think it is completely unfortunate because the people that are so in love, and maybe this is the wrong term, but so enamored with getting rid of somebody doesn't want to do it themselves.
It's true.
And
most
I've said
of the time that is the case.
I've said this for eons. And I will continue to say it till the day I die, and you can probably put it on my tombstone. It's okay to bellyache and complain. I'm okay with that. I do it too. Here's the thing I always try to come back to, and this is what I try to do in my life, and I'm not perfect. But when I do complain about certain things, I try to come up with a solution to what I'm complaining about. And I have used this over and over and over and over again, and I will do it again right now. When you are ready to fire a coach or let a coach go, tell me who is the replacement.
Who's up?
Don't give me this crap. Oh, he's a horrible coach. Need to get rid of him. And then I ask you, well, who are you going to get to replace him? And you say, I don't know. You've lost it right there. I have tuned you out. You can shut the bleep up. We need to fire Ned Yost. I remember it.
Oh, yeah.
I remember it. The year they made the World Series in 2014. Royals fans, we got to fire Ned. Oh, we got Yosted. Great. Who the hell wants to come manage the Royals if you're going to fire this guy? Nobody could give you an answer.
No.
Well, we need to fire Dayton Moore. Dayton Moore? Why would you fire Dayton Moore? Who else wants this job? year and a half later. We love Dayton Moore. Yeah. Ned Yost is the greatest. If the fans were in charge of the Royals organization, we'd still suck. Because they would have cut bait with these people right away and had no plan in place to replace them. It happens in high school sports as well. You aren't happy with the coach. Your kid didn't play as much as you wanted your kid to play. Your kid didn't see eye to eye with the coach. You as a parent didn't see eye to eye with the coach. Maybe the coach nerved you the wrong way and you just hold that against them forever and you just can't wait for the day when that coach is gone. And so some people, and this is true and you know it, some people make it their mission from God apparently to get rid of a coach. And sometimes there is reason for a coach to leave. Don't get me wrong. There are times where coaches need to go. Coaches do the wrong thing.
And there's times where they need to go and you don't have a replacement ready and can't think of anybody, but it's just they have to go.
And sometimes coaches should go and they don't go and then you have problems, okay? Mm-hmm. So there's examples all the way across the board. But there are some people that get to make it so personal that they want to blow out the coach and they don't even care if he's successful. It's all about their kid. It's not about the team. It's not about the community. It's not even about the coach per se. It's about somebody's personal feelings towards that person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll give you an example. Joe Hurdle, a TMP, took his team to state again last year, coached him for years. And from what I understand, according to my sources, he upset the wrong person or persons and got blown out. After tons of success, he was pushed out.
Yes.
I understand coaches getting pushed out if they're not successful enough, not winning enough games, or not winning enough league titles or championships, if that's your goal. Although I will say,
based on each school's prerogative how they set their goals of how they want their kids to grow up, and how they want their kids to be coached, and what they want their kids to learn in sports, too.
Right.
Because there's a lot of coaches out there that have lost a lot of games that have been coaching for 20 years.
Yes.
But that's not what some of them don't put the same priority on winning a championship as they do on teaching your kids how to live life and do the right things, because it's not what it's always about. Obviously, we're here to win championships and to cover teams, and we have fun going out to state. But it's going to be different at each different place.
There are coaches that have won state championships that I could say to you weren't the greatest people in the world.
Yeah.
And then there are coaches that deserve to win all kinds of state championships that build character and build young men and women into great people, that those people would love to have that person at their wedding or whatever special occasion it may be. And even sometimes when the parents don't even like the coach, but the kid respects the coach. And actually, and that's the one thing that's unfortunate. Sometimes parents overrule. They don't even talk to their kid about what they feel. Yep. They just go off. And then eventually what happens is the wrong people get upset. And then coaches get blown out. And never do you stop for a second and say, gee, thank you so much, coach, for all the time spending, all the sleepless nights preparing, trying to make my kid a better person, or maybe challenging my kid. God forbid you challenge a kid to be better, because there are some parents that don't think you can do that. How dare you raise your voice to my kid? Well, then why don't you coach? Because I'm going to tell you something. It is hard to coach in today's society. And we have a shortage of coaches. Just all you got to do is look around. I mean, there's school districts in our area that are advertising weeks before the season begins, they need an assistant coach or sometimes a head coach. Okay.
We had one area team about 5-6 years ago that didn't have a coach the first week of the season.
Wonder why that happens. Also, why do we have a shortage of officials? Because adults, not kids, adults are kind of ruining it. And I'm not meaning all adults listening right now, all right? And I'm not trying to get on my soapbox and act like I'm the greatest person in the world, because I'm not either. I'm not. Yeah. But I can tell you from 25 years of experience in this broadcasting industry and the relationships I've built with coaches over the years and with officials as well.
Add another 16 for me, so put it at 41.
41 total. Collective years of experience that we've gone through. Trust us. Coaches many times get a raw deal. They get a raw deal even if they keep their job, because they don't get paid much. And then they give up so much in their family life and at home to help coach your kid, to try to make them a better person or a better player, or to give them an experience of teamwork. And it might be you might go 4-16, but those four wins were great. Or you learned that you lost 16 games in the season. You learned how to overcome adversity, and you love each other as teammates and as a coaching staff for your players. And you might be close-knit, but you just don't have the talent to be great, but you still had a good season in regards to the memories that you created. I think there is this misconception. You have to have a winning season or to win state to have an unbelievable year. That's not true. That's not true.
No.
And so I just applaud all the coaches out there. And here's another one. Ryan Eilert is the tenured coach in the North Central Activity Association on boys basketball. He's been a coach for just 11 years, which seems like a long time maybe for him, but 11 years is not a long time in the coaching industry. At least not once it was. Now it is.
It is now.
It is now. Exactly. If you can make it a decade in coaching, you've either, one, you've been great and you haven't pissed off the wrong person, or two, you're just a tremendous person and everybody loves you.
Yeah.
I mean, and that means something. Or you got the right in and nobody's going to fire you, I guess. You could have the connection. Now that, this person's my superintendent or on the school board, I'm safe. Well, it can go the other way. The wrong person gets on the school board and you're gone. And you're gone, and you're just like, okay, I'm gone. Well, I guess I can spend more time with my family.
Yeah.
I guess I don't have to worry about getting paid 25 cents an hour. You know, it's just, I just respect the heck out of coaches and what they do, and they're not perfect. We're not perfect. We make mistakes. They make mistakes. Officials make mistakes. But everybody in the stands, they never make one.
Yeah, I'm with you. This is veiled, but I'm getting texts right now about this conversation. The days of like the Don Melbys and the Chuck Fessendens and people like that, who Chuck Fessenden was at Northern Valley for over 30 years and just decided he's going to go ahead and hang it up. And obviously people know Don was at Pike Valley for over 30 years as a head football coach. Those are over. I mean,
Brooks Barta,
exactly. Roger Barta.
At Smith Center. I didn't mean Brooks Barta. I meant Roger.
Yeah. Roger Barta. And Brooks has been at Holton for a long time.
Too.
So he's going to be an example, though, eventually, too.
Yeah.
And probably already is of a guy that's probably been there for, 15, 20 years. I don't know how long it's been now for him, but I'm guessing it's well over 15. I know that, but those days I think are gone. I mean, I think there's so much pressure from, like you said, it's outside sources. It's not like, ask your kid how he feels about his coach or how she feels about her coach.
Yeah.
And
ask
tell me that she's going to him or her are going to say the same thing that you say about it. If you don't like that coach, if they do, then fine. Then I have more of a respect for your beef, I guess, with the coach. Now, if they don't, and you're just going over their head and saying, oh, this lady needs to be out as coach. We can't deal. We can't have what's going on anymore. That can't happen anymore. That's for me. Is ask your kid first. See what they think about it. See how they feel about this group of people. And it's just I can't say enough either about and that's why Saturday hurt for me. I wasn't there. But man, I want Ryan to win one so bad.
Oh, absolutely.
So bad. Because I know what kind of character of a person he is.
Absolutely.
And what he does with his program. And I don't do the games all the time like you do, but I talk to him every week in the locker room chats. And I know him well. We go to the same church. And it's like, I want him to have that success. And I want the kids on the team to be able to taste that success too. And these guys are putting in, like you said, so much time. And also they're volunteering for jobs that aren't their regular jobs and taking on head coaching positions of sports that they should not be coaching, but they've volunteered because you can't find anybody. And they put every single ounce of their effort into it to be that person for your kids and for your school. And let's just go ahead and forget all that because
you upset my kid.
There's
or you upset
parents.
Me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You didn't upset my kid. You upset my parents.
Let's not do what's best for the school. Or the team. Let's do what's best for my kid. The heck with the team. I don't care about that. And that's how selfish you come across when you do that. And now, if there's the entire team have a mutiny against the coach, okay, you got a problem, obviously. Okay? There's something there. But when it's one or two, I mean, there's kids. Here's the thing that's blowing me away about society today. There are kids that are leaving colleges and kids that are moving from small towns to other towns, and they're getting the play, but they're still not happy. It used to be the main reason why you got into it with a coach as a player or as your parent, was what? My kid's not playing enough. Now you got kids playing all kinds of time, and they're still blowing out the coaches.
Yeah.
And that's where I just, like, I give up. I don't know what the coach is supposed to do. I've had somebody tell me, Wade, would you like to coach someday? I go, whoa, whoa, no. I said, I'll just stick with what I'm doing right now. I help with some traveling basketball. I'm an assistant coach. I'm happy to be off that hot seat. I have no problem helping out with practices. That's fine. I enjoy that. But listen, no. Go ahead and let Ryan Islett be the head coach of the boys' basketball team. Let Sean Aremus be the girls' head coach. Jamie Walters, Darren Grauholtz. Just let no. I'm fine. There's a reason God put me in the place I'm at, and that is behind the microphone. All right, to talk sports and to cover sports. And can I help coach here and there with some people? Sure. But do I want to be the next head coach of any high school program in today's society? Oh my Lord God, no.
I just got a text from a parent. I'm scared for my kid that wants to go into coaching.
Yes. Here's another part. And I know we're going long with this, but this is really important, ladies and gentlemen. Here's another problem with this stuff. If you're not a Rule 10 coach and you're a younger coach, I've had a discussion with people about this recently. If there's a young person coming out of college and they get a teaching job and they really want to coach, and so they get into coaching, but things don't, and they're a great teacher, but coaching doesn't work out, and they get blown out before they're tenured. It happens.
Oh, yeah.
And so then guess what you're told by other coaches? Wait till you get tenured before you really try to go into coaching, or don't even coach. Don't put your job at jeopardy. Your teaching position pays you a full-time salary. Mm-hmm. The coaching is what, $3,000 on a supplemental or a stipend, whatever the heck it is? Might not be that much, might be more, I don't know. But it's not worth it. I've had coaches I've talked to personally said, my recommendation for younger people is you love the coach, great. But if you are young and you're getting in the teaching profession, you have to know when you sign up to be a coach, especially a head coach, that if people get mad at you and they are all about sports instead of about academics and the job you do as the math teacher, the English teacher, the Spanish teacher, you might be the greatest Spanish teacher in the school or in the state. But because you rubbed one person the wrong way on your team or the wrong parent, your job could be in jeopardy because you put yourself out there to help coach people at making 50 cents an hour. So be careful. And guess what happens? People do, like you just said, oh man, do I really want to get into that? I love the coach, but is it really worth me going into that type of situation? And the same thing happens for people out there. Keisha probably don't like this conversation because you want people to go ref. You want people to sign up the ref. But before you decide to ref, you got to look around and go, do I really want to be yelled at all the time?
Yeah.
Some people get yelled at home all the time. They don't need any more of it. Do I really want to do that? And then what happens? You don't have the quality coaches you once had. You don't have the quality referees you once had. Exactly. Then you have referees that are refereeing varsity competition instead of JV or freshman where they should be because there's a shortage of officials. You have head coaches that aren't ready to be head coaches that should be coaching JV or freshman or junior high to get the experience to be really good high school coaches. So they're forced into tough spots. And so then the quality may be hampered. And it all stems from what? Pressure.
Unrest and pressure, yeah, just from...
from people that don't do it.
Exactly.
So, listen, I'm not saying every coach in the world's perfect. Not saying that at all. There are coaches that have done some bad things and deserve to be gone. But
and
there's
that's
so many
what
instances.
This discussion is about.
No. This discussion's about people that put so much time and effort to be a coach and do so much for their, not even their team and their school, but the community. And it is all forgotten and erased because one or two people or three or four people, or they get people behind them to blow somebody out. And it's a movement, is what it is. And the movement usually doesn't have any plan B. The movement is just get rid of that person.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what the cost, we don't care. And here's the thing. Once those kids get out of school, they don't have to deal with the ramifications, those people usually.
Yes.
That's what's even more frustrating.
Yes.
Okay. So... Beloit falls in the championship. Let's hear from Ryan Eilert. Obviously down after the game, as you would be. I mean, you're so close to winning a state championship. But, man, Beloit had one heck of a season.
It's been a special group, and they have a lot to be proud of. The accomplishments they've had this year, you know, has been tremendous. And to be able to play on this stage and give themselves a chance, you know, is something that they will keep with them forever. And just knowing that they were part of a great team. And you win as a team, you lose as a team. And you know, this group has gone through some tough times together. And, you know, that's what makes a quality person is when you're there for somebody when things aren't good. You know, it's easy to be there when things are good. But, you know, who's going to be there when you're struggling? And they've got some friends that'll they'll be around them in those times. end.
Did you just hear that comment from Ryan Eilert? That's a head coach. He didn't talk anything about winning or losing.
No.
In that comment. There was nothing about we want to win so bad. I mean, no, they did. But he was talking about life. He was talking about people that were with you all along when you struggled through adversity. He wasn't talking about people that jump on the wagon and support you when you're winning, which that happens all the time. I mean, come on. We know that at every level. I mean, there are people that jumped on the Beloit Trojan bandwagon when they got the state.
Been to a game all year.
There are people that were on social media asking about when the game is and this, and they didn't care all year long about what was going on, but all of a sudden they care, which is fine.
Yeah.
Welcome them onto the bandwagon. It's unlimited occupancy.
Especially at that level.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's great that people want to jump on the wagon and so forth and so on. But that was well said by Coach Eilert right there, and that totally exemplifies the point we were just making about coaches. You can't. Can you tell he cares about his kids? Can you tell that the kids really like to play for him? Absolutely. Same can be said of many other coaches, including Jamie Walters. Jamie Walters, the head coach of the Osborne Bulldogs. Listen to him when he talks about his seniors after Osborne took home third at state. What a wonderful year. 25-1. The one loss in overtime in the state semifinals. Here's Jamie Walters talking about his seniors.
You know, Cade, obviously, great leader and, you know, just plays so hard. And that was definitely something that showed to the other coaches. You know, every one of them complimented. I like how number 11 plays. And they do. I mean, he's a great player and a lot of energy and a lot of effort. And, of course, Darnell, the athleticism. I mean, I'll never coach another player that athletic for sure. Although Darian's probably not far behind.
Yeah.
Of course, Jordan, you know, similar to Katie, that gives her all he's got all the time. He gets on himself probably to a fault, but great player and great kid. And Logan Corbett, too. I mean, obviously, he's been out 4 years, and, you know, he worked hard every day in practice and tried to give us a look every day. And, you know, it's just one of those numbers games, but he was very important to us. You know, just probably the kids is what you miss the most about them. You know, yeah, they're basketball is great and all, but at the end of the day, it's a game, and just a great group of kids.
I mean, these coaches, I'm almost ready to cry.
Yeah,
I mean, they're proving exactly what our point is. I mean, at the end of that, he's like, man, I'm going to miss these kids, you know? And
it's a game.
It's a game. There's a bigger thing in life, and it's called life. It's, you know, game. It's sports, and that's why we got so caught up in, you know, wow, this sucks. Life's not fair. We didn't win a state championship or this or that. Well, you know what? You got to thank your lucky stars. You've got your health. And you got a lot of things to be happy with. And you know what? Your life isn't defined by whether or not you won or lost a state championship.
No.
And if it is, then you've got other problems you got to deal with.
Personal things.
Yes.
Like if you're still reminiscing and think that the best moment of your life was 1997 when you won the state championship.
Yeah.
And that's not, I would just picked out a year there.
Right.
That's not anybody in particular.
Right.
I'm trying to think, did anybody win a state title in 97 around here think I'm making fun of them? But, you know, it's not. It's
right.
It shouldn't be what it's about.
Yeah. A loss certainly shouldn't define you either.
You're going to remember it, obviously, and it's going to be great. But
sure. Absolutely. All right. So you heard from Coach Walters. The Osborne boys finished third. What a run they had. And the Thunder Ridge girls also finishing in third.
Three pointer on the way for Kaylin Votes, and it banks in. So the Leafs down to 10 with 1 second to play. Bice dribbles it across half court. Your Thunder Ridge Lady Longhorns finished the 2018-19 season with a victory. They are the third place team in the state. And this season at the 1A state tournament at United Wireless Arena, the Lady Longhorns win it by 10 over Waverly, 54-44.
So after the game, here's another coach. You know, all he cares about is WSLs, right? He didn't care about his kids. He's just worried about holding the trophy. Not so much. Here's Darren Grauerholtz.
They've been great leaders this year. You know, I know you and I have talked on the radio or in private before about trying to control the senioritis. You know, and I think that's one of the things we did. We nipped it in the bud. Somehow it disappeared over Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
It was gone. They started playing ball again. Got six straight up there with the league championship tournament. And just everything started molding. And then, you know, once we go to the regionals, everything was really starting to flow, and we were playing our best games. But like you said, it came from those three seniors that got a lot of time on the floor. And it's difficult when you got that many people that can score. So, and they are unselfish.
They're unselfish. You know, a common thread in teams that make it to state is usually they're unselfish. I mean, you can point to every single team there. Thunder Ridge, Osborne, and Beloit are three area teams that went all the way to the 3 days of the state tournament. What do they have in common?
They're unselfish.
Unselfish.
They're teams.
And where do you think that helps come from? Coaches.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you what, and what one of the, if you're looking for stats, because everybody wants stats for unselfish, right?
Sure.
Look at a team's assist to turnover ratio when they go to state, and every single one of them is going to be more than a little over 1-to-1 for some of them, but some of them are going to be 2-to-1, 3-to-1. That means they pass the ball, they assist, they work the ball around, their teammates.
Central Plains girls had, what was it, 31 field goals, 28 assists.
Yes.
And do you wonder why they won 111 in a row?
Their turnover ratio is about 3-to-1.
That's insane.
And so
at that level.
Yeah, and so it is. It's crazy to think of, but that's because a lot of people are like, you can't quantify that, but you actually can. And it's teams that go to state, that win state championships, that understand we have to be a team. Emily Ryan averages 30 and a half points a game, but she also averages 6 assists a game. You know, she's the best play I saw this whole state tournament was a pass. Okay, so that's what you have to have, and you got to have coaches like we just heard from. You got to have coaches that care and love their kids and want them to succeed, not just on the court, but in everything else they're going to do in life. And these guys are going to remember these coaches.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know,
I've got family that remembers all their coaches that they've had and are saying so many good things about them and friends that'll cherish those relationships for their entire life. I got a coach from high school that coached the Trigo girls in the state championship or the state tournament this week, and they ended up fourth place. But I'll never forget that guy, and I love that dude. I mean, he was my favorite coach, and you can understand, and you know the ones that are in it for the right reasons that are doing it for your success, and they don't really care as much about theirs.
Yeah, and the ones that don't stick out like a sore thumb.
My senior year of high school, I had one of those.
Me too. All right. The state champions, by the way, let's see. Where did I pull that up at? I've got so many things opened here. There we go. Class 1A, no surprise. Central Plains boys over St. John. Central Plains girls over Hanover. You put the line at night. You put the line at?
18.
18.
I have it.
You actually should be working in Vegas, my friend.
I clipped the cut, and I have it. Because I wanted to have proof that I said it, and I didn't just make that up. At the end of the Thunder Ridge game, I was like, Hanover's a really good team, but I'd put the line at plus 18 for Central Plains. Obviously, I meant minus 18 on the line, but plus 18 for Central Plains, and it was.
And they won by 18.
I'm like, surely they made a basket at the end of, like, oh my goodness, they're actually going to win this thing by 18.
That's insane. As I said, Osborne boys, Thunder Ridge girls get third. 2A, Ness City, quite the run. They beat Hutch Trendy in the championship. Hutch Trendy, a team Beloit beat earlier in the Sterling Tournament championship, so Hutch Trendy and Beloit both finished second. Inman took third in boys play over St. Mary's Colgan. Girls championship, Garden Plain over Sterling, 47-40. Waukini finishes fourth, leading Waubonsie, the third-place game. Perry LeCompton beat TMP in the boys' third-place game. As we mentioned, Girard over Beloit, 49-45 in the championship. Girls' final is a fantastic game. Royal Valley, their first-ever state title. So in 3A, you had two schools with the first-ever state titles in basketball. Royal Valley hadn't won a state title in anything since 1974, and it was cross-country. So it'd been a while.
Yeah.
Before I was born, so it's been a while. Yes. Royal Valley beat Cheney in overtime, 55-52. They were the sixth seed. Norton girls beat Nemaw Central for third, 36-33. Your 4A boys champion, Casey Piper. The girls, Bishop Miege, what a shocker. Andover Central and 5A boys, 5A girls, St. Thomas Aquinas. 6A boys, Blue Valley Northwest, and Washburn Rural wins the 6A girls title. All right, now that the basketball season's over, all league teams have been announced and released. We have all this at ncksports.com, but I'll let Dusty go ahead and hit the highlights of the local folks that made it on the all league team. They deserve that recognition, and then we'll get to the Big 12, and then if we have time, touch upon the Chiefs.
Yes, first team selections for the Beloit boys, Vincent Pollin, Hudson Smith, Tate Thompson, and Carson Cox for the all-NCAA team. Hayden Budke, also an honorable mention pick from Beloit. And then on the girls' side for Beloit, first team selections were Shea Larson and Sydney Barrett. And then Jess Meyer was an honorable mention pick. Again, the full teams for the NCAA All-League can be found at ncksports.com. And Northern Plains League, I'm going to go through the first teams here just to save time, and then we can get, again, ncksports.com. That's all posted. First teams on the girls' side, Thunder Ridge, the league champions, had two, Brennan Kirkhoff and Leigh Pettijohn. Lauren Dubert and Kara Eilert of St. John's Tipton first team picks, and Wilson's Kaylee Hanslick on the first team. And then on the boys' side, This first team was probably one of the easiest that I've seen in a while. I mean, they're all very worthy and of these spots. The league champions, Darnell Holloway and Steele Walters of Osborne, both first team, and from St. John's Tipton, Brady Pollen and Brandon Bates, and Derek Gillett of Rock Hill was the first team selection as well. You know, all league teams are posted at ncksports.com.
You went to the NCAA too? Did
yes,
you go through
I
that?
Did.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. All that, as you said, ncksports.com. Now we shift gears to the Big 12, where there's new champions atop the Big 12 for the first time in 15 years. Co-champs K-State and Texas Tech.
They turned it around. They won 9 straight games at one point, and now they're going to close out the regular season winners of 5 of their last 6. For the first time in 15 years, it's not Kansas atop the Big 12 standings. It's Kansas State. Congratulations to the Wildcats. Co-champs in the Big 12.
Bruce Weber talks about winning the Big 12 title.
It's about them. We win because of the players, and I'm just so proud of the seniors, the whole team, the resilience to lose the first 2 games, you know, early, you know, with all the injuries, all the things, to keep coming back. So it's just for them to continue to fight and battle. You can't, you know, this is about them to enjoy it. It's so great to see that, to be part of it. It's the thing you dream about for them, and I appreciate our fan experience people did a great job creating a special celebration of a Big 12 champion, and our guys deserve that.
Texas Tech beat Iowa State earlier in the day. K-State took care of Oklahoma 68-53. They cruised to the victory. Dean Wade after the game. Bramlage is a special place for him because he played there in high school and in college.
In high school, this was always the goal, to get to Bramlage. You know, they held the state tournament here and stuff like that. And so I was lucky enough to come here twice and win twice here in high school. And then, you know, me committing here, I got to play every home game here. And, man, it's been an incredible 6 years. In Bramlage, and I mean, this means so much to cap my senior year off, Big 12 champs, clinching at home, last game in Bramlage. So I mean, it's been an amazing journey. Couldn't write it up any better.
Dean Wade with 11.7 rebounds, 4 assists. Barry Brown, 15 points, 4 assists, 3 steals. Kamau Stokes led the way with 19. K-State seniors on senior day score 45 of the team's 68, 14 of their 15 assists in their final game at Bramlage Coliseum. And Wade and Brown kissed the floor. The middle of the floor there, the logo at half court after the game. Special moment, K-State 24-7, 14-4 in the Big 12. Texas Tech 26-5, 14-4 in the Big 12. Big 12 tournament coming up this week. It starts Wednesday with the play-in games, as I call it, feather bracket games. K-State is the number 1 seed, virtue of a tiebreaker against Texas Tech. Tech is the 2, Kansas is the 3. They'll take on Texas Thursday night at 8 o'clock, probably be more like 8:30 on Z96.3 The Lake. And K-State will play on Thursday. They await the winner of TCU Oklahoma State, which, you know, you really like that matchup for K-State, especially if it's Oklahoma State, although who knows, that'd be the team probably trip them up. Dean Wade is question for the Big 12 tournament. I don't know if there's any need to play him in the Big 12 tournament, unless you want to enhance your seed in the NCAA tourney, or if this is just kind of a window dressing to allow them to say, okay, we're going to hold him out of the Big 12 tournament instead of we're just resting him.
Yeah.
This would be a way to make it sound like, hey, you know, his foot flamed up a little bit, we're going to keep him out, because I think maybe that's the plan all along. And he might be just fine, but this is the way to cover that up a little bit.
So you don't come out like right after that and say, hey, he's questionable.
Yeah.
If he wasn't questionable earlier.
Right.
You know, listen, they needed to win a title.
Right.
So he played.
Right.
They don't – the absolute only reason you would play Dean Wade in this is if you really feel like you have to win the whole tournament
right.
to get a seed that you like.
Yeah.
But you're probably going to be around a 4, 5, 6 no matter what is what it's looking like.
Oh, they'll be better than a 6.
Yeah. But
I think they'll be a 3, 4, or 5.
Yeah. And, you know, I would say 4 or 5 if they don't win the Big 12 tournament.
Right.
Like, does it matter after that? I mean,
yeah.
You're not.
We talk with Riley. It might be better being a 6 than a 5.
Yeah. You don't need this net, this year, RPI or anything. None of that's factoring into whether you're going to make the tournament or not.
Right.
We won the conference regular season. You're going to be in.
Yeah.
Let's be as healthy as we can going into the NCAA tournament. I could care less. I mean, yeah, if they win the Big 12 tournament, that'd be cool.
Right.
But I don't care what happens this week as long as everybody's healthy going into the tournament.
Well, yeah, because you got to share the Big 12 title.
Exactly.
And you don't usually remember who won the Big 12 tournament title.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you want to make another run the Elite Eight or make the Final Four, which will be in Minneapolis this year. All right, the Big 12 honors have been released. Player of the Year goes to Jarrett Culver of Texas Tech. Defense Player of the Year to Barry Brown at Kansas State. Newcomer of the Year to Deidre Glosson. So now we made everybody happy by giving each of them an award.
Yes.
Those are the 3 guys that are arguably Player of the Year. You know, statistically, Lawson's probably the Player of the Year, statistically. But that doesn't always tell the story. And I think Barry Brown is, of those 3 players, he's probably the most complete player of the 3. And then Jarrett Culver, I mean, Texas Tech, the way they finished, he was fantastic this year. Listen, to me, Texas Tech, K-State, they earned it. Fran Franchella put the nugget out on Twitter, and he's so right. K-State and Texas Tech combined to win 20 of their last 23 conference games. They deserve the title. They shared it, and they should. They deserved it.
You started 0-2 and went 14-2 the rest of the day. If you're K-State, you without question earned that.
And look at Tech and how they finished. They earned it. Chris Beard is the coach of the year, and that's based mostly mainly on preseason. They were picked 7th.
Yeah,
and he won a share of it. Yeah, and K-State was considered to be one of the top contenders. Yeah. That's why Bruce Weber doesn't win it. And Scott Drew was considered a candidate there for a while. Most improved player, Christian Doolittle, Oklahoma. And the six-man award goes to Lindell Wigginton. The first team all, let me try this again, all Big 12 first team, Shayok, Iowa State, Lawson to KU, Barry Brown to K-State, Dean Wade to K-State, Jarrett Culver to Texas Tech. All Big 12 third team, Devon Dotson of Kansas. And Kamau Stokes got honorable mention along with Xavier Sneed for Kansas State. I think you could make an argument that Stokes could have been at least a third team Big 12 player the way he finished, no question. So all of that. And the all Big 12 freshman team, of course, Dotson's on that. Newcomer team, we mentioned Lawson was newcomer of the year. The all-defensive team, Marcus Garrett of Kansas and Barry Brown, Kansas State on there. Go to Big12Sports.com to read more about that. Did the AFC West just get tougher? For the Kansas City Chiefs, Antonio Brown supposedly is being traded from the Steelers to the Raiders. Does that worry you at all as a Chiefs fan?
Not at this point, it doesn't. I think the Raiders need a lot more than Antonio Brown.
I think he could be more of a cancer than a solution.
Exactly.
But especially if he gets upset when Derek Carr doesn't throw him the ball. But we shall see. Remember, Amari Cooper was supposed to be a stud, didn't work out well, went to Dallas, went a lot better.
Oh, yeah. So. Dallas is even as much as they gave up for him, I think most of them all forgot about what they gave up with what he did.
Here's what I'm worried about with Oakland and the AFC West is they got a ton of really high draft picks. If they draft really well and they added Antonio Brown, then I'm concerned. I want to see who they draft, but I would be a little bit concerned because they got three first-round picks. Trading for Antonio Brown, they didn't have to give up first-round pick. How about that? That tells you the Steelers are ready to get rid of him.
Yeah.
I still would have loved seeing Brown go to Buffalo, but well.
No.
The Chiefs announced Sunday, guess what? This is a report that was a week or so early and was wrong, but now it's right. The Chiefs announced Sunday that outside linebacker Justin Houston has been released. The 30-year-old former third-round pick out of Georgia spent all 8 NFL seasons in Kansas City, where he logged 78.5 sacks, 14 forced fumbles, 4 interceptions. Clark Hunt said in the statement, over the last 8 seasons, we had the ability to watch Justin grow into a leader on and off the playing field. His passion helped him become one of the most successful pass rushers of franchise history. We appreciate his contributions to our team and community, and he'll always be considered a part of the Chiefs family. This is simple. If it was all about the player, the Chiefs would have kept him, but it's about the contract. And the Chiefs saved $14.5 million by letting go of a 30-year-old player who has been injury-prone since he signed that big 6-year, $101 million deal with the Chiefs, which at the time we had said on this very show that was a mistake, and it proved to be one because they didn't get their money's worth out of that deal and certainly not out of the Eric Berry deal either. I would not be surprised if Eric Berry is the next guy to go, but it would probably be after June 1st to help on the cap even more. Then again, I wouldn't be surprised if he's still on the team either, but I think that would make sense to let him go. So this makes sense. It sucks because I like Justin Houston, and I've enjoyed watching him play as a Chief, but it's part of the business. It's about finances. And for the Chiefs to try to win a Super Bowl, and with the upcoming big contract they're going to give to Tyreek Hill, Chris Jones, and Patrick Mahomes will be after next season probably. You got to find money somewhere, and 30-year-old guys tend to decline quickly in the National Football League.
Except
for guys like Tom Brady and stuff for some reason. And the Royals, I knew it was all coach speak. You knew the Royals were going to make a move for a catcher.
Oh, yeah.
Catcher Martin Maldonado has agreed to a 1-year, $2.5 million contract. He is a really good defensive catcher. He won the Gold Glove a couple years ago, breaking Salvi's streak. He hit .225, not great, 9 homers, 44 RBIs for the Angels and Astros last season. But he frames pitches. He plays great defense. He won a Gold Glove. And, you know, Gallagher's not probably an everyday catcher yet. Valoria, I think they'd like him to stay in the minors and develop a little bit more. It makes sense. It's only $2.5 million. It's a 1-year deal. If it doesn't work out, no, it's not that big a deal. And here's the thing. If he plays really well, they could trade him at the All-Star break, get something for him, and then maybe Gallagher or Vial are ready to go full-time as catcher. So Royals adding a catcher in place of Salvador Perez. Well, folks, thanks for tuning in to the Sports Ticket. One thing I will say here, this is interesting. I'll end with this. I had a state championship game. I had the Trojans versus the Trojans, Girard versus Beloit. And I decided I like to come up with some catchy intros. I try to for especially when you get the state.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided, well, it's Trojans versus Trojans. I'm going to look up the definition of Trojan, the word Trojan. I'm going to look up the definition of Trojan. There were three different meanings, but the second one stood out to me. One who shows qualities such as endurance or determined energy. And you know the first name that popped my head immediately when I read that?
Hudson Smith.
Hudson Smith. Hudson
That's
Smith.
The easiest question you've ever asked me on this
show.
I know.
I know. Isn't that weird? I have not looked that up ever.
Hey, I should have probably looked it up, too, because I was a Trojan in college at Colby.
That's
so
true.
Like, I should have known that.
That's true. So let me go over one more time. One who shows qualities such as endurance or determined energy. There has never been a player in the history of sports that I've ever seen in my 25 years or 43 years on Earth that exemplifies that definition more than a 5'6 guard who led in rebounding at state, 10 rebounds the first game, 10 in the semifinals, 7 in the finals, averaged 9 rebounds a game, and he's the smallest guy on the floor. You don't think that has something to do with endurance and determined energy? And also, by the way, he led in floor burns, as always.
Yes.
Diving all over the floor. And I do not know how many extra possessions he saved for his team this year as a senior, but at one game, I counted 10. And if I timed that by 26 games, he came up with probably 150 to 250 extra possessions for his team.
Yeah.
That will be hard to replace next year. And, of course, 5 seniors will be hard to replace. But the definition of Trojan, one who shows qualities such as endurance or determined energy attributed to the defenders of ancient Troy. I'm like, well, there you go. He's a terrific defender.
Yes.
It all ties together.
And it's a trait that applies to pretty much every kid that's ever played from that family.
Absolutely correct. Well said. Well said. So I wanted to throw that in there as well. Congrats to Beloit on a great season at 24-2, finishing second. Osborne finishing third, 25-1. Thunder Ridge, 23-3?
23-3.
23-3, third in Class 1A girls. Their best ever finish at state. Congrats to them, and thank you to all the coaches out there, whether your team made it to state or not, for putting in all the time with our young women and men, the future people of America that will be deciding whether or not I get Social Security when I get older. Thank you to all those people and to the officials as well. There was a ceremony. Byron Pollan was recognized at halftime, I think it was before the championship game down in Hutchinson for his years of service. So thank you to all those folks that officiate and coach at whatever level you do that. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I want to apologize for yelling at you at some point during my life.